Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Breakdown, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about tonight. It has been another, let's go with hectic week in Alberta politics, and the last 24 hours in particular have resulted in some spiciness that we're going to get into. Before we do, I just want to throw a quick reminder out there that if you're one of our Patreon sponsors, you can hop in on our Discord. If there's comments that you want to add, if you want to make fun of my hat or, I don't know, my goatee, that seems to be a common thing that people like to make fun of for reasons. I think it's classy and I'm forbidden from ever shaving it. But if you want to hop in on our Discord, then you can do that. If you're not one of our Patreon sponsors, maybe you should be. Getting right into the week, though, because I've got 4 pages of stuff that we have to try to work our way through tonight. We're going to start with something a little bit fun. So for the first time, Breakdown's been doing this whatever it is that we do here for coming up to 3.5 years now. Almost, we'll almost be, yeah, I think it's 3.5. We'll go with 3.5. We've been doing this for almost 3.5 years. And yeah, we don't like to talk about metrics and stuff because that puts the focus on entirely the wrong things. But we got an interesting notification earlier this week, after last week's episode, in fact. And it's worth a giggle. So for the first time in the history of The Breakdown, according to the folks at Chartable.com, The Breakdown charted at 238 in Great Britain. So, hey, England, how's it going? Good to see you. Thanks for, I guess, tuning in, at least a couple of you. I don't know what the political podcast scene is in England. But I can only imagine that there's a good number of folks who are hanging out in the UK and they're looking over at what's going on right now in Alberta and they're going, you know, we got this Boris Johnson dumpster fire going on, but at least we're not them. So as has become the practice, we're going to start with the lighter stuff and we're going to work our way into the less light stuff. There may be some profanity later on in the show because I have some feelings about some things. But moving on from there, there's some other good news. And it's really surprising that this good news wasn't celebrated more widely. One of the things that we've heard from governments in Alberta, whether we're talking about municipal or provincial or aspiring politicians, pundits, all the politicos, say it's impossible. Can't be done. You can't build a pipeline anymore. There's all these laws the feds have put in. You can't build a pipeline. Except you kind of can. So there is a new natural gas pipeline that's being started up from Alberta running through the states going through BC. And it's got some things that are definitely worth celebrating. So to start with, it's a 31-kilometer natural gas pipeline. And it's going to create this year 520 new jobs. Next year, they're estimating that it'll be 630 new jobs. It is a mystery to me why it is that, for reasons, I guess, nobody's talking about this pipeline. It's TC Energy. It's a big deal. It's a big pipeline. It's getting more natural gas. It's getting more of Alberta's energy products to market. And yet the news coverage on this is very small. And, you know, Mr. Pipeline, Mr. Kenny, has not said anything about it. So that's kind of weird. Moving on from there, though, into the actual politics part of the show. Thomas Dang. Looks like that story may or may not have reached a bit of a conclusion. Thomas Dang is, of course, the MLA, the NDP MLA, who's now sitting as an independent, who got himself into a bit of hot water because he tried to hack one of the Alberta Health databases and was actually successful on more than one occasion. Now, the story has kind of evolved as it's gone because one of the things that's happened is initially when it happened, Dang went to the powers that be at the NDP and said, hey, I did a thing. And the powers that be at the NDP said, okay, we'll tell some people. And the communications guy for the NDP went and reached out to the Alberta Health Ministry and said, hey, we heard, we got a tip. Don't know how serious it is. Might be serious, might not be. You should maybe look into it. The guy sounded worried. And they talked about the fact that there is maybe a weakness. Maybe it should be looked into. And then it was kind of, and they said it might be a prank. Now, of course, they knew, because it was Thomas Dang, the MLA, who said, hey, guys, I did this thing. They knew that it had happened. It wasn't a prank. It wasn't a rumor. It was a real problem. But they decided to do a little bit of CYA stuff in the time being. Well, Mr. Dang came out this week and officially announced that he didn't no longer wanted this issue to be a distraction. He didn't want it to be something that pulled attention away from all of the other issues that are going on. So not only would he not be trying to rejoin the NDP caucus, but he's actually not going to be running again. Now, for a lot of people, this kind of puts the issue to bed. But I can't help but think to myself, one of the greater issues has to be the NDP knew that he had done this and they tried to cover it up. And while Mr. Dang will be moving on, hopefully to good things for him, no ill wishes, there's definitely still, you know, we've heard over and over again about this internal culture at the NDP where they try to cover things up. They try to keep things quiet. They try to bully their opponents. This might just be another symptom of it, but it's something that part probably isn't going to go away anytime soon. Moving on from there. Good news. Finally, this week, fourth doses. Wearing the shirt and everything. Fourth doses of COVID vaccines are now available to people who want to sign up. You can sign up. There's a lot of pharmacies that are doing walk-in. I spoke to my neighborhood pharmacy, and they said that they were out of the stock of the kind of vaccine that I needed. But they did say that they will be getting more of it, and they will be taking walk-ins. But you can also go through the government website, and you can make an appointment. And that's what I ended up doing, because I wanted to get mine as soon as I possibly could. The evidence on vaccines and the efficacy of vaccines is really, really strong. They make a big, big difference. And they're undoubtedly one of the reasons why we have seen fewer ICU admissions. Hospitalizations are way up, but we're seeing fewer ICU admissions, which is good news. So, personal plug, go ahead and get vaccinated. I'm looking forward to a day of the Moderna flu and then knowing that I'm safer in the long run. Totally worth it. So, get vaccinated. Because things are starting to pick up. As you can see in the graphic here, for those of you that are watching this on our YouTube live stream, as you can see in the graphic here, these are the latest wastewater results for Calgary. Now, these are as of July 20th. We're probably going to be getting some new numbers in the next little bit. But you can see not only is it trending up big time in a bad way, but that there's a little data point up there near the top. That's the most recent data point, and it's going really high. So we're starting to see, coming out of some sort of major event that may have may not have happened a week and a half ago, that COVID numbers are starting to really, really crank up. And while this is going on, we're also starting to see bigger and bigger cracks forming in the healthcare system. It came out this week that Airdrie Urgent Care, you might remember when the stampede started up, when we did our very first, it wasn't a stampede broadcast during the stampede, I guess. When we did our very first one of those, we talked about the fact that in a rather unprecedented move, Airdrie Urgent Care was going to be closed on the first Friday and Saturday of Stampede in the evenings. Now, it's important to understand, Airdrie Urgent Care is one of two 24-hour urgent cares that exist in sort of the greater Calgary area. And for the Airdronians, I believe is the term of choice. For Airdronians out there, it's the biggest healthcare nearby. And having access to it 24 hours was actually a really big deal and something that the Airdronians pushed for quite a while. Because if you live in Airdrie or around the Airdrie area, the next closest 24-hour facility is going to be the Peter Lougheed. Well, apparently they're having a bit of a physician shortage, and so they closed it for those first 2 days of Stampede. But wait, it gets worse because it came out this week. It's actually going to be closed for 8 weeks on weekend evenings. Now, not only does this have a major, major impact on people who are trying to access healthcare in Airdrie, But it also has a major, major impact in a lot of other ways. Because first of all, you're going to see all of those patients who would normally try to get to the Airdrie Urgent Care on that Friday or Saturday. Instead of them being able to go to Airdrie Urgent Care, they're now going to have to go to one of the major 24-hour hospitals, which means all of the major hospitals are going to have that many more people to deal with. One of the other things that we talked about 2 weeks ago was the fact that the government has been very clear that part of the EMS crisis has to do with hallway waits. That's been well established in our conversation with Mike Parker, the president of the HSAA. He said, yeah, hallway waits are a really, really big problem. We have to do something about them. One of the strategies that the government put forward was we're going to transport more people to urgent cares, because if they're not dying sick, they need care for sure, but if they're not dying sick, then they can go to an urgent care and they can get the care that they need, and that way ambulances can get back out on the street quicker. And when we're seeing news stories on an almost daily basis about ambulances not being available in Calgary, ambulances not being available in Cochrane, ambulances not being available in Airdrie, the turnaround for those ambulances is actually really, really important. And now, one of the only two 24-hour urgent cares is off the menu for EMS to transport to, which means they're going to be transporting those people to either the only other 24-hour urgent care in the Calgary area, which is the Sheldon Schumer, or they're going to be transporting people to one of the major hospitals. So again, not only do you have the diversion of all the people who want to seek care going to Airdrie Urgent Care, not being able to do that, but you also have the diversion of all of the patients that EMS would normally want to try to take to urgent care, and they can't do that. And this is going on for 8 weeks. This is a really big deal. And it's one of the reasons why getting vaccinated is a good thing. Some other good news. We saw the UCP for the first time in a while start to walk back some of their decisions that a lot of people were really, really upset about. So one of the first ones that we want to talk about has to do with the insulin pump program. So the Alberta government for a while subsidized insulin pumps. They made sure that patients who needed an insulin pump could get an insulin pump paid for. And insulin pumps make a huge difference in the quality of life for a lot of people who are dealing with diabetes, because it enables them to get a regular, steady flow of insulin to help regulate their blood sugar and monitor their blood sugar, and it lets them be mobile. They don't have to be tied to the location where their stuff's at. So it's a really, really valuable program. And on May 2nd of this year, Jason Copping announced that they were going to be ending that program. And there were a lot of people who were really, really upset about it, because not only was it getting rid of the support for their existing needs, but it was also, unfortunately, going to be the way that Mr. Copping presented it is he said that they were going to be moving to a program that would get them the more higher tech, the most cutting edge insulin pumps. Now, you might remember, we got a little curious about that. And if you take a look at the timeline, things get really, really interesting, because that decision came on the heels of a lobbying effort by a company that makes high-tech insulin pumps. So that's a little bit sketchy, to say the very, very least. But the kicker to that whole story was, of course, that the person who was doing the lobbying for that company is an ex-UCP staffer and an ex-UCP press secretary. So not only did they make this policy change that was going to negatively affect a lot of diabetic Albertans, but there were some very real questions as to what the motivations for that policy was. We talked before on the show about the problems that we have in Alberta and Canada as well, where there's a revolving door of lobbyists who become political staffers, who become lobbyists, who become political staffers, and that presents the opportunity for a lot of access and a lot of influence that may not be in the best interest of Albertans. Well, it turns out that the government did recognize, that was not in the best interest of Albertans. We're not going to do that. So they walked it back, which is fantastic news. And it's, I dare say, a little bit hopeful, because Mr. Copping, the current health minister, didn't show up in anyone's driveway. And he did make a change. He walked back from his position. And not only did he say that they're going to be ensuring that people will still have access to the pumps they need, but he also said that they will be integrating in the high-tech pumps as they go. So I guess Maybe Buddy still gets paid. I don't know. But they announced it just a couple of days ago. Although it had... Can we maybe stop using the phrase securing the future? That has some really big, uncomfortable connotations for anyone who's been paying attention to sort of what the far right's doing. It's got some meaning that maybe we don't want to see coming out of our provincial government. Just spitballing there. One of the other big stories. The Pope is coming to town. I guess technically, by the time we're doing this broadcast, he's here now. And he's going to be doing a tour of a bunch of different places to talk about and apparently apologize for the Catholic Church's role in the horrors of residential schools. Now, this is a really big deal, and I don't want to talk about it. And the reason why I don't want to talk about it is because there's some really important voices out there from First Nations and Indigenous peoples who we should be listening to. There's no settler has any business trying to weigh in on the relationship between First Nations and the Catholic Church. I really do believe that. This is where we should be listening to voices and amplifying them. So I want to mention really quick two of my favorite voices that consistently provide really, really good, really, really important and accurate information when it comes to First Nations issues. The first one is Brandy Morin. You can follow her on Twitter at songstress28. She's a First Nations reporter. She's Cree, Iroquois, French. And she has done, I have learned so much from following her reporting. She has done some award-winning reporting. She has talked about First Nations issues in ways that we have not seen represented in mainstream media very well at all. So if you can, give her a follow, because she's already talking about covering and she's been covering the Pope's trip to Alberta, Edmonton, Calgary, all those places for a little while now. And the coverage that she's doing is extremely important. The other person that I want to just give a shout out to and encourage you to follow is Rachel Ann Snow. We had Rachel Ann Snow on the show probably close to 2 years ago. She is an incredible advocate for First Nations communities. She is insightful and she is cutting. She takes no prisoners. But if you want to get a better idea of what's going on with First Nations stuff, those are two Twitter accounts that I would absolutely highly, highly recommend that you follow. But there is one group that I think it is important to address. The Freedom Convoy has absolutely no business inserting themselves in any of the events surrounding the Pope's visit or any apologies. It is beyond disgusting that the chief of Musketeers had to issue a statement saying, when the Pope is here to apologize and he's on First Nations land, we don't want the Freedom Convoy trying to show up to make this about them. I am hard-pressed to think of a more self-entitled, self-important, perfect highlighting of the problem with settlers. And the problem with, I'm going to go ahead and say it, this is some... I'm going to paraphrase what a friend of mine would say, but this is some peak white people bullshit. There's no reason for anybody to be trying to insert any other cause other than what First Nations people want brought forward in this conversation. And it's disgusting and gross, and I just wanted to go on the record and condemn the holy hell out of it, that anybody from the Freedom Convoy would show up on First Nations land during an apology tour from the Pope to try to make this about their bullshit. Moving on from there. Told you it was going to get more serious as we went. Moving on from there, gas prices. So some of you might not remember. It's been really hard to tell lately. But some of you might remember a little while ago, Mr. Canning came out and said, oh, the gas prices, they're so bad. Cost of living so bad. We're going to suspend the gas tax. We're not going to take the gas tax in for ourselves anymore so that more Albertans can afford to get gas. It'll help with their cost of living. This was part of their whole effort to do these things. And at the time, a lot of people said, well, Mr. Kenny, how do we know that they won't just, the corporations that are selling this gas, how do we know they just won't up their prices? And Mr. Kenny said, oh, no, they'd never do that. Well, it's starting to look like that might be, at least in Alberta, that might be exactly what they did. Economist Trevor Chum put out a tweet a couple of days ago where he's been following it. He was following the gas prices. He was following the difference between what we should be paying and what we actually are paying with the gas tax being suspended. Now, it's important to highlight here, when the gas tax first came out, Mr. Chum was very, very clear. He thought it was working. And the graphs that he put up show that for a little while, it seems like it was. Now, not so much anymore. So Mr. Kenny came out of his cave, and he announced that he was going to be doing three very important things to address this problem. Issued a statement where he talked about it. And the three things are, first, number one, he's going to write an angry letter. He's going to write an angry letter to say, hey, this isn't okay. So he's actually going to be asking the feds for help. So he's reached out to the feds, and he put a letter out yesterday where he released the letter, and he said, this is what we're doing. He's concerned that there may actually be price fixing going on, which would be, of course, illegal. And then the other thing that he's going to do is he's going to see if Service Alberta can do anything. Now, this is where I kind of bump a little bit. And the reason why I bump is one would think if you're about to suspend a not insignificant revenue source for the government, if you were going to get just put it on pause for a little bit because you wanted to make sure that people's cost of living was better, if that's what you were going to do, and you decided to do that, one would think that you would maybe look at what were sort of the levers of power that you could pull if you needed to, if people and corporations took advantage of that. But apparently, that due diligence wasn't done. And so Mr. Kenny's going to look into doing the due diligence now. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It's also going to be very interesting to see if those prices drop. And it'll be, if you're one of those financially minded people, then definitely consider following Mr. Toom, because he's been staying on top of this quite well. The other big decision that was announced was that the UCP was walking back changes that they made to the Victims of Crime Act. This came about in May of 2020 when the Justice Department under Doug Schweitzer announced that, hey, they noticed there's this Victims of Crime Fund, and it's got some money in it. Probably could do some stuff with that rather than support victims of crime. And so Doug Schweitzer announced that he was going to be tabling legislation to change how that fund could be used. And he was going to be using it for doing a bunch of new things. They were going to hire 50 new prosecutors. They were going to increase funding for ALERT or the Alberta Law Enforcement Response Teams. And they were creating their rural police force. That's what they were going to use that money for instead of supporting victims of crime. And there were some pretty big concerns that came out of that. I'm going to play you a video right now. And this video kind of made the rounds right in May of 2020 because there were some very big concerns. Now, Mr. Schweitzer was doing regular radio interviews on this radio program. This is where the audio that you're about to hear is from. And you'll hear there's some problems.
Seeing their comments, they kind of mentioned that there may be some barriers to that. I guess number one, is there always going to be money available in that fund, number one? And number two, are there any barriers in place that you're aware of that maybe make it sometimes harder for victims who need that fund if, like, a family member is killed, for example, by a drunk driver or case of a sexual assault, for example? Is there, like, maybe some barriers in place that you're aware of that may impede that a little bit?
So what we've done, the Victims of Crime Fund usually has a budget about $40 million a year. We've actually increased it to $60 million. And we've expanded it to include public safety initiatives like drug treatment courts. That's how we're paying for these drug treatment courts in Alberta, is through the Victims of Crime Fund, by expanding it to include public safety initiatives. The Victims of Crime Fund is going to continue to be there for Alberta. This is kind of what the NDP style is. Like, I've been in the legislature now for just over a year. They're really good at trying to scare people with half information. The Victims of Crime Fund is still going to be there. The grants for victims organizations are still going to be there. We still have benefits for people that have gone through catastrophic events. Like, if somebody's been seriously sexually assaulted, you know, somebody has been, you know, murdered, maybe the victim's crime benefit will still be there.
Now, there's a whole lot to unpack in that video. It's worth noting Doug Schweitzer is no longer the justice minister. It's also worth noting that he's come out publicly and said that he won't be running in the next election. So it's kind of tempting to give him a pass. But we asked the question in May of 2020, and we're going to ask it again. What's a serious sexual assault? What's a not serious sexual assault? How does somebody who's been murdered get the benefits of that fund? It's pretty clear back in May of 2020 that Mr. Schweitzer didn't have a really strong grasp of what the fund was or what it was supposed to be. And so it's good news that the fund is now going to be only used again for supporting victims of crime. But as much as Mr. Schweitzer liked to talk about the fact that, oh, we increased the funding, if you look at budget 2022, they decreased it again. Which brings us to, let's call it the main event. It's kind of been a running closing segment for the last couple of episodes, and it probably will be for a while. Because there's really no doubt that the UCP leadership is really one of the biggest political stories that's going on in Alberta right now. And unfortunately, it's a lot more dynamic, I think, than a lot of people would like it to be. The deadline for candidacy passed last week. And as of right now, as of today, there are 7 candidates who are officially recognized as official candidates on the UCP website. Leila Heer, Todd Lowen, Rebecca Schultz, Rajan Sani, Brian Jean, Daniel Smith, and Travis Taves. Now, there were actually 8 candidates that put their paperwork and their names into the mix by the deadline. One of them obviously isn't on that list. That person is Raj Sherman, Dr. Raj Sherman. So Raj Sherman's campaign has been a very, very strange one. And since the deadline, there haven't really been any public statements that we could track that were issued by him. So while we know that other candidates did hear quite quickly, yes, you've been approved, it seems the outcome of Mr. Sherman's campaign seems pretty clear. And that's probably because from the very get-go, the UCP was very clear that because Dr. Sherman hadn't been a member for the required time period, they wouldn't recognize his candidacy. But yet he went on with it, and he announced that he had submitted $125,000, the required number of signatures, at 4:55, with the cutoff being 5 p.m. And to celebrate, he was going to BC, which is a fascinating... that's a weird statement. Hey, I just submitted all of the things that I think I need in order to run in the leadership campaign, so I'm going to BC. But obviously Mr. Sherman hasn't, as of yet, issued any kind of public statement, like I said, and there's no recognition of his campaign on the website, which is probably in the land of predictable outcomes because the UCP said they weren't going to let him run to be a candidate anyways. What's going to be fascinating, though, and what we're going to be watching really closely for, is in effect, he just donated $125,000 to the UCP. Now, part of his campaign, he's been doing a lot of talking about Edmonton. And in fact, he even put out a message saying, if you want to see Edmonton represented, vote for me in a race for premier, which one would think maybe represents the entire province. So it's going to be very interesting to see if Mr. Sherman's name goes into a nomination race for the UCP in Edmonton. We're going to be following that fairly closely. The elephant in the room, though. Once again, we bring ourselves to another week where we are forced to address the, I'm going to use the term shit show, that is the Danielle Smith campaign. It has been a, I mean, credit to Danielle Smith. She gets a lot of free media. There's a lot of people who are know her name. They might not all be for the best possible reasons, though. Last week, we talked about the fact that there was a news report where multiple members of Danielle Smith's campaign said that they had sold 7,000 memberships over the course of 10 days. And they actually believed that number was low. That's how much momentum Danielle Smith was reportedly bringing to the game. Funny thing happened on the way to the newspaper, though. Don Braid released a column where he directly quoted the Brian Jean campaign. Because as people started to get approved, they also started to get membership lists. They started to see how many memberships were sold. And according to the Brian Jean campaign, for all the candidates combined, every single candidate, all of the seven, and maybe even eight, because I assume Roz Sherman was selling some memberships, for all of the candidates combined, for the time period that Danielle Smith's campaign was talking about, there were only 6,000 memberships sold in total. Now, obviously, this is all information that's internal to the UCP. There's absolutely no way to verify what either camp is saying. But certainly, the Jean campaign version sounds a little bit more credible. But that was just the start of Danielle Smith's week. Shortly after she, or also last week, sorry, I shouldn't say shortly after, she started floating this idea that the Alberta Sovereignty Act, her legislation that she wants to introduce, that would, she claims, despite the interpretations of constitutional lawyers, despite the interpretations of constitutional scholars, she claims, despite all of that expertise, that her Alberta Sovereignty Act would allow Alberta to pick and choose what federal rules they wanted to follow. Now, depending on where she's appeared, she's soft-pedaled or hard-pedaled this to varying degree. But she started floating this idea last week that one of the reasons why the Alberta Sovereignty Act would be so important is if the feds, if Justin Trudeau decided to mandate that all children under 12 had to receive a COVID vaccination in order to attend school, that's exactly the kind of thing that the Alberta Sovereignty Act was built for. Except none of that is federal jurisdiction. Education is provincial jurisdiction. The health protections that were put in place at the peak of COVID were not put in place by the federal government. They were put in place by the provincial government. All of the health protections that we saw, by and large, in Canada, or in Alberta, sorry, all of those health protections were largely put in place by the provincial government. Now, there are some federal employees that were told this is going to be the federal employee policy, so you have to follow it. And certainly, international travel restrictions were decided by the federal government. But when you talk about what most Albertans experienced during COVID, with any kind of health protection or restriction, if that's the word you want to use, that all came from the provincial government, not the federal government. And this is part of a reoccurring pattern that we see from Danielle Smith, where she just makes shit up, throws it against the wall, and sees what'll stick, because she knows that her base will buy it. And she doesn't care, it seems, that she's grossly misleading them. In a truly stunning turn of events, we saw the voice of reason in this situation was Jason Nixon. This is Jason Nixon, who was part of the earplug scandal. This is Jason Nixon, who was part of the Sky Palace scandal. This is Jason Nixon, who, I mean, you can just Google the Sprawls story on Jason Nixon. There's some things in there about horses and violence towards women, implied, that aren't a great look. But Jason Nixon came out and said, there's no way that the Alberta Sovereignty Act would pass the legislature. And he actually, he didn't target Smith specifically, but he did say that he doesn't believe that anybody in the leadership race should be making ridiculous promises and ridiculous statements and overpromising things, because they would inevitably have to underdeliver. Now, this is, again, this is something else given Mr. Kenney's campaign and his whole fight back strategy and everything else that was going on and the debacle that's the war room and the whole Bigfoot shit show. But Mr. Nixon was the voice of reason in this, and he wasn't the only one, because Travis Taves came out shortly after and he said, yeah, I don't think it would pass either, not only because it's not legal, but I've got like half the UCP caucus who have endorsed me and they're all freaked out by the idea. And a bunch of them have said they wouldn't support the idea. And this is where it gets important for people to understand how legislation actually works. Because the premier can't just walk into the legislature and say, I've got a new law, here we go. It has to be voted on by all of the members of the legislature in attendance that day. Without those votes, there's no unilateral decree. But this is part of the thing that makes Danielle Smith's whole bit so alarming, because she's talked about how she wants to have her own police force that will pick and choose, or will follow the laws that she picks and chooses. She also seems to be convincing her base that it doesn't matter what the rest of the UCP MLAs want to do. She's going to get this legislation through 100%, even though we have at least two MLAs, one of whom is the House leader, I might add, coming out and saying, no way, no how is this happening. But then we get to the really big problem of the last week. Last week, we talked about the fact that Danielle Smith held an event where she had Theo Fleury, who believes that the vaccine passports were so pedophiles could track kids. Theo Fleury, who has said some truly remarkable things about 5G and microchips and all of the vaccine conspiracy theories, Theo Fleury seems to have embraced. Theo Fleury, who also has accused Justin Trudeau of perpetrating some sort of thing that's equivalent to the Holocaust on Canadians, which is not only demonstrably false, but just offensive in every way that a thing can be. Well, she had an event where she had Theo Fleury on and legitimized him as some sort of expert in mental health. This week, she apparently decided to up the ante, because she decided to have I think she called it a podcast. It was broadcast to Twitter, was put on her Facebook, was put on her YouTube, and it was a conversation, if you can call it that, between herself and a naturopath. Now, terminology gets to be really, really important in understanding this conversation, because there's a lot of people who are trying really, really hard to legitimize a lot of the things that involves naturopathy. But it doesn't take much looking to see. There's only one organization that claims to teach the arts or whatever of naturopathy in Canada. They have two campuses. And there's no shortage of voices that have stepped out of that campus after completing the program and saying, holy cow, not only did I get fleeced for like $75,000, but now that I'm out and actually doing my own reading of medical textbooks and stuff, this is bullshit. This isn't true. But naturopaths embrace sort of all of the woo science, if you will. And that's largely what they sell. Now, there's no shortage of sources to demonstrate that there are indeed some natural remedies that do have positive effects. To paraphrase one of my favorite comedians, Tim Minchin. Do you know what they call natural medicine that's been proven to work? Medicine. Aspirin is a great example. Comes from the bark of the willow tree. Has all kinds of beneficial effects. Nobody calls aspirin alternative medicine, because it's actual medicine that actually works. And there's no shortage of examples of things like that. But when we start talking about a lot of the things that naturopaths advocate for, there's absolutely no science behind them. So I just wanted to set that context before we got too far into the shit show. And we're going to start with one of the most, quite frankly, offensive and problematic, which is saying something, comments that I've heard from Danielle Smith so far.
Absolutely. Once you've arrived and got stage four cancer and there's radiation and surgery and chemotherapy, that's an incredibly expensive intervention, really? Not just for the system, but also expensive in the toll it takes on the body. But when you think about everything that built up before you got to stage four and that diagnosis, that's completely within your control. And there's something that you can do about that that is different.
Now, that was Danielle Smith trying to argue that the preventative, I'm not going to call it medicine, options that naturopaths advocate for can prevent a lot of the health conditions that exist out there. That's just false. There are for sure things that we know that increase the risk of cancer, but there are babies who get born with cancer. There's nothing they could have done to reduce that risk. There is a tremendous genetic component with risks of cancer. This is one of the reasons why there's no shortage of women who know that they have breast cancer history in their family. And there's no shortage of women who have opted to go for mastectomies in order to mitigate that genetic risk. And there's no naturopath in the world who can do anything to mitigate genetic risk. Our Twitter feed and our Facebook feed have been largely unmanageable today because there are so many people that have lived experiences either themselves or with family members or loved ones or friends or people they care about who didn't do anything wrong and they ended up getting cancer. And there are a lot of people who are deeply, deeply hurt today and tonight because of these comments from Danielle Smith. Now, I want to be very clear. We didn't share the comments from that thing that we shared because we were trying to hurt people. That was absolutely the last thing we would have ever wanted to see happen. But the reality is, this woman is running to be the premier of Alberta. Her comments are absolutely relevant to public policy. They're relevant to the future of our healthcare system. And these comments are dangerous. Now, I know that there's probably some people who are listening to this, who are watching this. I know we're going to get some comments where people are going to say, but you know, there's elements of naturopathy that are rooted in science. Well, let's let the doctor, air quotes, that Danielle Smith chose to elevate speak to that herself.
There's been a long-standing misunderstanding or myth that maybe naturopathic doctors aren't scientific, or, you know, I have been called a voodoo doctor in my lifetime. I have been called, you know, a quack in my lifetime, because some of the things we do don't always, they are clinically, and I have clinical experience, I have clinical data that would say they're beneficial for someone, but the science might not support it. And science is usually about 20 years behind. Like when I was in naturopathic medicine, we'd really started like learning 25 years ago, 30 years ago almost now, we were starting to learn about gluten diets, about the gluten in the diet and how detrimental it was. And more from an exposure point of view, as well as celiac. Celiac disease was just starting to kind of be diagnosed 25 years ago.
Now, there's a lot to unpack in that clip, but the first thing that I want to highlight is the fact that this naturopath started by saying, you know, there's people who believe that we don't do things based on science, and then immediately pivots to, we don't do things based on science. She said it herself, her anecdotal clinical experience. And that's a very important phrase to unpack. You say clinical experience, that can be any kind of experience that you have in a clinical setting. And to assume that anecdotal clinical experience is 100% accurate means no physicians, no healthcare workers have ever misinterpreted anything in the history of medicine. Obviously, that's not true. So her anecdotal evidence that she uses to provide treatments that by her own admission have no scientific evidence defeats her point right out of the gates. But then she goes on to talk about how science is usually 20 years behind naturopathic medicine, and she tries to use celiac disease as an example. Well, as we pointed out on Twitter earlier today, the first case of celiac disease was described and diagnosed in 1888. I guess it's naturopathy that took over a century to catch up to established science and established medicine. Now, again, one of the questions that we've gotten a little bit today is, why did you share this stuff? Well, this is the biggest reason right here.
I think that there's an unfamiliarity, and that's what I'm hoping that we can bridge the gap on. If you had some advice about going into the fall respiratory virus season from the politicians, I feel like politicians do not have these kinds of conversations like I'm having with you. Mm-hmm. I do not feel like the environment for the doctors who are providing advice into those who are the decision makers, I don't feel like they're integrating any of the things that we talked about today. I gather that in the UK, they have a chief medical officer of health that's a doctor, but they also have a chief nurse and they have a chief paramedic, which I thought was interesting. That but I've been wondering, great. Do I need to have a committee that's a chief doctor, chief nurse, chief paramedic, as well as a chief of integrative medicine or chief of functional medicine or something along those lines? I'm just trying to scope this out. I just feel like there's this whole area of prevention that's vitally important. As we've already talked about.
That's why this is important. Because as much as Danielle Smith likes to use terms like functional medicine, she's talking about naturopaths. As much as she likes to use terms like integrated medicine, she's talking about naturopaths. Those two terms are, by and large, almost entirely a rebranding of naturopaths, because so many people have said, well, that sounds like woo. So they've added some important and some real sounding titles in order to apparently gain some form of legitimacy that many people argue they don't deserve. Because again, natural medicine that's been proven to work is just called medicine. But Danielle Smith apparently doesn't know, we do have a CMOH here in Alberta. In fact, we do also have a chief paramedic here in Alberta. But she wants to add a chief naturopath. She wants to add somebody from a profession who, as we already heard from the air quotes expert that she chose to highlight, that she chose to try to legitimize, often bases their treatment decisions without any scientific evidence. Now, there are a lot of people who gravitate towards naturopathy and alternative medicine and alternative options. And there are a lot of tragic stories that go along with that. Steve Jobs is a great example of somebody who believed that he could pursue alternative therapies that had no basis in science, and then realized far too late there's nothing more that he could do. And then tried to embrace conventional therapies in order to have at least some kind of quality of life for the end of his. There's no shortage of stories about that. And like that. And it's really, really unfortunate. But this is the fundamental theme, it seems, of Danielle Smith's campaign. She seems to be exploiting the fact that there are a lot of people who feel out of control. Whether they feel out of control because we've all been living through 2+ years, almost 3 years now, of COVID, where we've had this thing that is so much bigger than what so many of us can even begin to understand, dictate how we're going to live our lives and change how we're living our lives. Everybody's tired of that. Everybody's frustrated with that. That frustration and that sense of loss of control lends some people to pursuing anything that will give them a sense of control, even if it's a lie. Danielle Smith has done this not only through her radio program since the beginning of the pandemic, but after she left her radio program because she falsely claimed that hydroxychloroquine had a 100% cure rate. She continued to do it after that. And now we see that she's applying the same principles to health care. People who go to, a lot of people, I shouldn't say all, but a lot of people who go down the naturopathic route exclusively are doing so because they're not able to get access to the healthcare system that should be serving them. And they feel like their lives are out of control because they've been given a diagnosis that doesn't have a whole lot of options for them. And they feel like they're out of control. All it is a placebo for being in control. And it is beyond reprehensible that Danielle Smith continues to take advantage of people who are just feeling out of control so that she can further her own career, not only politically, but certainly through the media. And it's certainly not what any Albertan deserves from the office of the premier. It is absolutely mind-blowing to me that the UCP are allowing somebody who plays so fast and loose, not only with the facts, but people's fears, to run to be the leader of the party. And it says a lot about what the priorities of the people making those decisions are. Now, as always, I'm going to say, if anybody has anything they want to add to the conversation, absolutely. If you're on the Twitter Spaces, feel free to click the little microphone thingy. Love to hear from you. In the meantime, I'm going to do my obligatory Patreon plug, as one does. The live streaming that we're doing tonight, it's only possible because of the support from our Patreon supporters. The gear that we need in order to continue to grow and do the things that we do, that absolutely comes at a cost. And that cost, all of the money that we get, goes right back into improving our gear, improving all of the things that we need in order to continue doing what we're doing. And puppet supplies. And the good news is, I know I've been talking puppets for the last couple of weeks. We've got three. And next week, even if Danielle Smith continues to ramp the crazy up to 12, to quote, or 11, to quote Spinal Tap, we're getting some puppets in here because we all need to. It's one thing to take things seriously when you need to take them seriously, but at the same time, if you spend all of your time just being serious, that's no fun. We like to have fun here. So next week, you're going to see a couple of appearances from a couple of puppets. It's going to be a good time. And the materials for those puppets, they come from our Patreon supporters. So if you want to give up a fancy cup of coffee just once a month for $5, you can, or more if you're feeling super generous, you can sign up to be one of our Patreon supporters at www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab. And we would love it if you did, because it helps. And the puppets are fancy. We have three. Like I said, we have three. One of them is, I think, going to be very well received. And it looks like there's nobody who wants to call me out on anything tonight. So, I guess at this point we'll say thank you so much to everybody who has either caught what we're doing on the live stream. If you've been somebody who's been listening on the Twitter Spaces, we want to say thank you to you. If you're listening to the podcast version or you're watching the video of this episode sometime throughout the week, thank you for taking the time to watch what we're trying to do here. And at the end of the day, just remember to be kind to each other, be patient with each other, call out the bullshit where it is, keep the conversation going.